Hello, this is Sarah with a quick update on where to find my guided meditations. I'm grateful that you have chose to tune into these meditations on your favorite podcast player, but going forward, these will be published on Spotify at The Mindful Movement Meditations. Be sure to follow this Spotify channel so you can receive the latest published meditations. The podcast interviews will remain here wherever you download your podcasts. Also, if you have not yet subscribed to my new YouTube channel inspired by my years of private coaching, please check it out at The Mindful Movement Coaching. And last but not least, Les and I are excited to announce our first retreat, The Great Unwind, coming up in April at the Art of Living Retreat Center in Boone, North Carolina. Find out more at themindfulmovement.com/retreat. We hope to see you there.
Ever feel like your energy, focus, and recovery could use some extra support? Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly without any added fillers. When I was in the middle of what seemed to be a personal health crisis, Quiksilver Scientific was one of the brands I could always trust to get an effective, high-quality product. I remember using some of their liposomal nutrients and detoxification supplements. Every formula is designed with advanced liposomal delivery that wraps nutrients in tiny spheres your body recognizes, helping them absorb quickly so you get more from every dose. They have clean formulations, non-GMO, no unnecessary fillers, and they're allergen tested. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. That's tryqs.com/mindfulmovement. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. I have a confession. I fell in love with coffee many years ago and have never looked back. Coffee and I share a special relationship. I love the taste and the morning ritual, the focus it delivers, and the general good mood it consistently provides. I also like to tinker with a host of different supplements to enhance my state of mind and my ability to feel my best. Everyday Dose has made this easier by putting some of the most useful ingredients into one product. Everyday Dose is coffee plus benefits. They combine high-quality coffee with the powerful ingredients like lion's mane and chaga, collagen protein, and nootropics to fuel your brain, boost focus, and give you clean, sustained energy all day long. It tastes just like coffee without the downside. No crash, no jitters, just clean, sustained energy. Right now, for Black Friday, get 61% off your first Coffee Plus starter kit, a free A2 probiotic creamer, and over $100 in free gifts. Plus, enter for a chance to win $100 cash or get your entire order refunded. Visit everydaydose.com/mindful or use code MINDFUL at checkout.
When you really have to pay attention to how you're swallowing, you have to like stop everything. If it's not naturally done that way, if you've been compensating in other ways or having a tongue thrust swallow pattern or a reverse swallow, you have to really pay attention. You have to scan your whole body. You have to have the food or water in your mouth and you have to tell yourself, okay, I'm ready to swallow. Is my food collected in a bolus in the center of my tongue? All not scattered, but in a bolus. Okay, it's there. Now I need to put the tip of my tongue right behind my front teeth, bite together and swallow. And that wave that you were saying pushes the food back into your throat.
Rachel Davis, thank you for joining me on the podcast.
You're welcome.
It's nice to see you. It's unfortunate we're not in person because I met you in person.
Yes.
First of all, I would like to just say thank you. I've been enjoying your local services of, I hope I get this right, craniosacral facial therapy and fascial therapy and myofunctional therapy. The word myo just refers to the face.
Yes.
Right? And I guess for the listeners, just some context, my inquiry into this goes back a little bit. Years ago, when James Nestor's book Breathe came out, he came on the podcast, and that was like a pivot point for me, learning about historically about different things as they pertain to like mouth structure, health, and such. And I was inspired recently to kind of follow his footsteps with getting like my mouth fixed or my jaw fixed. And I searched like, what's the device James Nestor had? And it's this thing called a HomeoBlock. And I found a local dentist that provides these things. And basically for the listeners, the HomeoBlock, and I'm going to have the dentist on, I think in a couple months to talk more about that. But it's basically a palate expansion, maneuvering, realigning device thing. And I feel guilty about it because when I was young, very young, my mom forked out the money for a palate expander because I had the issues already. And, you know, we didn't have any money. And she worked three jobs, raising three kids on her own, basically. And the fact that she forked out that money for that device, and I was probably supposed to wear a retainer for like a long time to
like forever.
Forever. And I think one day at school in the cafeteria, I like threw the retainer away in the trash. And the thing that haunts me is I don't know if it was an accident or intentional because I did a lot of shady shit as a little kid.
It was like, subconscious.
It might have been like I might have thrown that thing out. And now as an adult, I'm like, that's so messed up if I did that. And now the device, of course, is way more expensive that I'm using. So I'm paying the price. But in that process, the dentist highly recommended that I reach out to a myofunctional therapist to like parallel the process. And there's obviously synergies. So I would like to dive in definitely to the myofunctional therapy, if there's time permitting, maybe into the craniosacral stuff too. Because craniosacral, and I know you do craniosacral fascial therapy, I've had craniosacral therapy in the past, and it's surprisingly always been the most relaxing modality I've ever experienced, and I can't understand why. Like, if somebody was watching from, you know, 5 feet away, they'd be like, what the hell's going on here? It doesn't look like anything. But it's more relaxing than any massage or acupuncture or whatever I've ever had, which is just interesting to me that arises like that. What was you? And now you also work in a dentist office. So I assume you're on ramp, Rachel, into this world of fixing people's like mouth and tongue operation was born out of being in a dental office. Maybe you could tell us how you got into this stuff.
Yeah. So I'm a dental hygienist as well. I was a dental assistant for 10 years and then became a dental hygienist. I've been a hygienist for 12 and a half years now. And in the beginning, you know, there were things like a lot of tartar buildup on the lower front teeth. It was just kind of something we just knew was a common situation. We didn't really know much about tongue ties we thought were if you could not speak or if you couldn't nurse as a baby or if you couldn't talk, you know, just speak properly. And, you know, when COVID happened, we took a course online from the Vivos Institute that talked about airway. And I had no idea about it at all. This was my first introduction to it. And I just sat there watching all of these courses talking about how tongue ties, low tongue tone, and orofacial dysfunction can cause sleep issues, and it can also lead to digestive issues and constant waking in the night, even bedwetting for kids or constant, you know, arousal in the middle of the night. And it all just kind of started clicking to me. And I sat through all of these sessions on this virtual class for 2 days, and my mind was just blown. I was like, this connection just from the mouth to the airway to your entire body made so much sense to me. And I just fell in love with it, but took a little while to get into it. And then once I did, I was like, wow, this is it. This is where I want to be. This is the best thing for me.
So you alluded to the idea of low tongue tone. From what I've learned over the last few years, the tongue is way more important than what most people would ever think of. What is low tongue tone and why does that matter?
Low tongue tone is when the tongue muscle is weak. Your tongue is actually the strongest muscle in your entire body. You're constantly using it to speak. You're using it when you're breathing. You are using it when you're swallowing, when you're chewing. It is constantly used. So when it is a weaker muscle and you don't have full function of it, then that can start affecting your breathing, because if your tongue sits low in your mouth instead of up in your palate, which is where it's supposed to live at all times, it should fill that entire palatal space, completely filling it at all times. And your tongue's your natural expander. So if your tongue isn't always sitting up and strong, then it's low. So sitting down low in the mouth shows low tone. And that low tongue tone will lead to all kinds of neck issues. It can lead to headaches. It can lead to, again, digestive issues, sleeping issues, because then your tongue falls back in your throat because the muscle's weak, and then it blocks your airway while you're sleeping. And sometimes people have issues with that during the day even.
Right. I think that's what really drove me to try to get something fixed. It's like I did all these tongue exercises to try to improve it, but I literally didn't have the room for my tongue to be in the right position. So it wasn't a lack of like trying or strength or exercises. It was like my teeth, my palate was too small for my tongue to fit. So when I'm sleeping, I guess my tongue is just farther back. Like I did all the right things, like breathing just through my nose, mouth always closed. And I remember having to like prove to a dentist once that like I can snore with my mouth closed. Like they didn't believe me that I breathed my mouth closed. I was like, my wife has documented this. I have proof. And then I like just demonstrated right in the office. Mm-hmm. Like that's not hard. But you mentioned swallowing too. Like I don't think people there's no question. People don't understand how much activity that the tongue is designed to do that we don't do. And like any other structure in our body, like this is really seen in like our skeletal muscle, that, you know, it's a use it or lose it type thing. And we need certain stimulus and mechanical stress to respond to have like ongoing adaptations to help us function in the world. And even something as simple as swallowing, like you gave me a test. I guess our first session was you just like analysis and you grabbed some food. I think they were like grapes.
They were grapes.
I was real picky. You were like trying to give me some bar and I was like, you don't understand who you're dealing with. Like,
I'm not eating that.
I'm very weird about what I eat. So you had some, I think they were like old grapes in the fridge. They're probably like way older than you told me. So I'm chewing them up. And then like before I swallow, you said, open up your mouth and let me see, which is kind of embarrassing. Like,
yeah,
it takes some vulnerability to like open your mouth and show a professional or anyone what the food looks like in your mouth before you're swallowing. But it was like all in the wrong place. Like it was real sloppy and spread out. And then you taught me that like it's supposed to be collected, essentially centralized. And then the tongue goes through this like muscular contraction. It's like this wave process from the front to back up to bring it down. And doing that took every ounce of attention and focus. And I've been kind of lazy with that exercise because it's oddly difficult.
It is. It is. When you really have to pay attention to how you're swallowing, you have to like stop everything. If it's not naturally done that way, if you've been compensating in other ways or having a tongue thrust swallow pattern or a reverse swallow, you have to really pay attention. You have to like scan your whole body. You have to have the food or water in your mouth and you have to tell yourself, okay, I'm ready to swallow. Is my food collected in a bolus in the center of my tongue? All not scattered, but in a bolus. Okay, it's there. Now I need to put the tip of my tongue right behind my front teeth, bite together, and swallow. And that wave that you were saying pushes the food back into your throat. And when you do your first swallow, then you should be able to stick your tongue out. And for the most part, everything should be gone. Every now and then there's a little bit left. But you want to clear most of the food with one swallow. If you don't, same thing.
Go through the
same.
Put
your tongue to the, same process. Tongue behind the front teeth, on the roof of the mouth, bite together, and swallow. And when you swallow, you also want to be aware that you don't have a whole bunch of tension in your neck. Like seeing all those muscles or, everything there, you also don't want any head movement. You don't want to see the lips purse as you swallow. Your face should be able to stay completely still.
So you should be able to like disassociate your tongue from all these other structures around the neck and face, which is way harder than it sounds. It's funny, like earlier, initially you mentioned like your fascination with how far reaching the effects are of how like our tongue is to everything. And you mentioned digestion and mm-hmm. what I experienced, just the act of practicing that does so many things that we've been all been told are good for digestion, like slowing down, chewing more. And like it forced me to, you know, put my fork down, sit back and like work the bite more. I have a history of just scarfing down food. Like, I don't know why, but it's not like I grew up with like a fear of not enough food. I don't know where it came from, but
I've been told that I look like I went to prison because I like lean over my plate and I just shovel and eat. My friends are like, nobody's going to touch your food. I'm like, I don't know that. I don't know why.
Maybe it's like prior lifetime. Maybe. But yeah, but it makes me think like, and I know there's other benefits to that as far as like the saliva production during the chewing part. Like it's encouraging all the things that we know deep down we need or should do if we want to optimize our health. But one thing also over the years that I've noticed around like old people, like aging population, is they have a lot of problems. And with that, and I even hear like I hunt a little and I've heard that in the wild, a lot of animals, like the beginning of the end is when they can't function around their mouth, like they lose their teeth and they can't consume the amount of food mm-hmm. they need to produce the amount of energy to drive all their, you know, functions and structures that makes up their body. So we definitely know that there's at least an association of like being not good at eating, like for the physical nature of eating and like the end stage of life. Where does it start though? Like, is this all like, do you just have to get lucky with like how long your mom breastfeeds you or something? I assume that that's where a lot of these patterns are imprinted initially.
Yeah. I mean, as long as you did not have a severe tongue tie when you were an infant, we innately have our tongue in the roof of our mouth. That is just where it is, as even when you were born, that's where it's supposed to be. So if it's a tongue tie, it's not going to sit there. But if it's not tied, it should automatically sit there. And the function of breastfeeding, it is just the most natural tongue motion that there is to do proper swallowing. And, you know, obviously fed is best, but if you can breastfeed for oral development, for facial development, for swallowing, for all of that, the best thing really is to breastfeed. And that's not to say anything bad about not breastfeeding, because there are things that get in the way. Some people can't do it, and that's okay. But yes, if someone is bottle feeding instead of breastfeeding, there is a higher chance of having orofacial myofunctional disorders or dysfunction.
So how long are you, like, what's the ideal duration to breastfeed a kid?
I mean, in other countries, they breastfeed 4 to 6 years.
What? Really?
I know. It's a little much for me. I'm like, that's...
What's the old saying? Like, when the kid goes to unbutton the blouse, like, call it off.
That was my thing. I had a patient who, her son just walked up to her in the waiting room and just... He was like 2 or 3 and just walked up and pulled her... You know, pulled it out and just started nursing. And I was like, yeah, I think that is the point where it's a no for me.
But is that also just like our, like a social construct in our mind? That
it is. It is. Absolutely. Because it is so natural and it's so beautiful and it's so good for your health, not just your orofacial muscles and your growth, but breast milk in general is like life. You know, so it really is just socially, it has been made like it's too much at a certain age. But in other countries, like I said, 4 to 6 years, kids are still nursing. And
what's the average now? Like in this country, what do you think people typically
say
do?
Two years?
Say, really?
Yeah, up to 2 years is the most I've seen in this country. I don't tend to see it most.
I think she's
going to
feel guilty. I don't think either of our kids.
I only did a year and... It was like a year and 2 to 3 months for both pregnancies. And my second one was twins. So, you know, that one, they took a little bit longer to wean off, but it's also just, I just wanted my body back. Right. I was like, I'm done.
It's funny. I was the youngest of three. And like when I was going, and my, and I grew up always had like crappy teeth, you know, mm-hmm. as far as the dentist said. And my sister, the oldest, always had great teeth. And we had like the same diets. We lived mm-hmm. in the same environment. And, you know, I think a lot has to do with, one, the health of the mother. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know if my mother at that time had really repleted herself nutritionally after the depleting process of having two kids. So like the more you have, like your health just might not be as good when you're having a kid. Yeah. So like as a third kid, like you kind of get a raw deal in some ways. And I know there's exceptions to that. Like I've seen exceptions to that, but I just wonder. And I also wonder, like, was she breastfed longer? And like, did she get all the benefits of all the good things that happened then? And I asked my mom when I was going through this learning a few years ago. But, and you know, she assured me that she did it for like a long time, but she's also like old and she's on a lot of narcotics and like, she's like, I don't trust her. Like, I don't believe, she might believe that she did that, but I'm pretty sure she's like not being honest about it.
Said for like a whole 3 years. That's yeah. what I did.
It would probably be code for 3 weeks for her. Because I'm pretty sure she was like still smoking and eating. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
yep.
So, what are the other, so like when you, we say low tongue tone, what are the other like connections throughout the body that you're aware of other than like the digestion, the facial structures?
So signs and symptoms in kids, just, you know, a gist of what that could be: difficulty with speech articulation, speech delay, chewing and swallowing issues, picky eaters or gag easily, having oral aversions to like flavors or textures, mouth breathing constantly, just open mouth posture, just always sitting with the mouth open, forward head posture, and, you know, sleep disordered breathing. So just, you know, stopping breathing in the middle of the night. For adults, some of the bigger ones are sleep apnea, snoring, clenching and grinding in kids as well. That is a very big one in kids.
How does it contribute to like clenching or grinding? Like what makes the body want to clench?
So because that tongue is sitting low and tethered to the floor of the mouth, all of those muscles, it's like your body innately wants to try to get your tongue where it's supposed to be. So when you're sleeping and you clench and grind, it's because there's so much tension here and your body is trying to move your jaw into the correct position to keep your airway open. So if you're clenching and grinding, it's most likely from the tension and also your body just trying to get you in the right position so you can breathe. If you can't breathe, you can't thrive. You just cannot live.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely, I think that's something that I deal with. Like at night, like I go to sleep fine, like super easy. But usually after like 6 hours of sleep, no matter when I go to sleep, what my evening routine is, I just get up and mm-hmm. I feel great. But like, I don't want to be up. And I wonder if that, and that's one of the things that led me to try to get to see if the, like the palate and the space for the tongue is the underlying issue, because I wonder if it's just the stress response from poor breathing that I'm not aware of. Like maybe I'm going hypoxic or something. And then you get like an adrenaline or cortisol jolt and then I wake up. And stress hormones could feel good. So like, I feel good and I don't feel stressed. I'm just kind of like pissed that like, it happened again.
Wanted to be sleeping.
Yeah. Like this morning, I got up and it was like 4:30 and I took it as a big win because it's normally 3:30. So I'm like, yes, documenting, what did I do yesterday? Like but like on most days I'm up at 3:30 and then sometimes I can get right back to sleep, but sometimes yeah. not. And mm-hmm. then it creates a chain reaction that I struggle with. Physically, mentally, emotionally. And so I have trouble stringing together consecutive good nights where I'm getting enough total hours consecutive mm-hmm. sleep. And so I'm hoping that that's it. I have this apparatus. I've been wearing it for, I think, a couple months now. I've moved my palate 1.75 millimeters. And I think the goal is 6. I think the device itself taps out at like 6. So yeah. It's definitely moved enough where I notice a difference. I don't know if it's affecting my breathing overnight. That's kind of hard to get a judge on by yourself.
That one takes a little, it takes a while longer. It's definitely going to, it's a slower process. But I personally like the slower expansion like you're doing because your body has more time to kind of catch up and get adjusted to what you're doing. Now, rapid expansion is great as well, but you know, like I was just saying, you want your body to be able to move with you. And
it's interesting you say that, because every time I take it out in the morning, I feel like everything's moved around out of place. Mm-hmm. But then after a few hours with it out, it's like the teeth know how to reset and come together. So they're mm-hmm. like adapting. There's this like ebb and flow where it's all happening together. So mm-hmm. why did the dentist tell me to seek you? Like, when I go see you, you got me. So let's talk about the myofunctional therapy first. You're doing. You generally have me laying down on like a massage table, and granted, you give me exercises, but like you're doing some kind of I don't know if it's manipulation or. But essentially, your fingers are in my mouth, like doing things that generally are uncomfortable. Like
for the release?
Yeah, like what's going on there? What are you releasing? What is that process you're doing?
Fascia, releasing fascia. So when we did your craniosacral fascial therapy session, I did some TMJ massage as well. And I did what's called floor of mouth release. So you have a lot of fascia underneath the tongue. All down in there. And because it gets all tense, holding your finger, just running it along the fascia and then finding a spot where it hurts, you actually want to stop there because that is where a problem area is. When you hold that area, it's going to then slowly melt and release that fascia. So that's what you're feeling when when that kind of just melts away. You're feeling that release of all of that.
Does everybody have tension in these areas? Like,
not everyone. Usually if it's lower tone, you're not going to have it. Most people will have it if they're more of clenchers or grinders, but it happens to everybody. You know, I'm a clencher and I'm still working on that, but I'm also in an appliance. I'm in a different one than you, but I'm also in a slow expansion appliance to get my palate open more, because even though it's a decent palate, it could be better. And I'm still having sleep breathing issues. What I deal with is more, it's UARS. It is upper airway restrictive syndrome. So it's more, it's not that I'm blocked. It is, I'm trying to think of how to explain it the right way. My body is just constantly in fight or flight when I'm sleeping. And I'm trying, because my tongue still is just, even though it's up there, it's still just not as high as it needs to be because my palate is a little bit narrow and it's very, very arched. So my tongue can't get up in there. So that's kind of what I'm working on. And I have all that tension down in the floor of my mouth, like you were saying. So it's just constant tension and trying to get that released with that specific move that we were talking about, that floor of mouth release.
So a high arch, do you know what causes that? Is it the same thing? Mm-hmm. Like
same thing, low tongue posture. So having the tongue sitting low instead of filling the palatal space, because it should, I don't know if this will show very much on here, but your tongue should fill the entire palatal space. Your tip of your tongue should rest here, middle here, and back should rest here. And it should be a very light suction at all times. So if it was like that as a child, through your entire childhood, your palate would have grown more naturally in that U shape, like that model that I was just showing. In a U shape, a flatter arch there. But if your tongue is sitting low and not suctioned up to the roof of your mouth, it is going to develop more of a narrow U or like a V shape. And then the palate can actually have just a very, very high arch and be just like very high right in the center.
Gotcha. And there's also like an aesthetic. Like I know I've binged on, the mewing videos on YouTube and seeing people that are trying to affect this, not just for health, but there's something about the structure of like the mid face when this stuff is all dialed in that is like more visually appealing. You know, it just makes people generally better looking, I guess. I think even in like, I guess Hollywood and like cultures where I guess vanity is a big thing and how you look, like there's like coaches everywhere that are helping people with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't imagine it's just the duration of the breastfeeding that's driving all this. I mean, what about the next transition stage? Like when you get, like, I remember my kids were little and, you know, I didn't know anything about any of this back then. My kids are 19 and soon to be 22 here.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything was baby food. Everything was in a jar and it was soft. Yep. And even like we went through phases where we tried to make our own to be like healthier, but we were just making like the same stuff. It's just mush.
Yeah.
When like, did they do that 1,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago?
They didn't. And that is a big part of it, is that we are a softer food civilization. You know, we don't tend to chew on the hard things that they used to. I mean, cavemen's mouths were just perfectly U-shaped and they could have all of their wisdom teeth. You know, there was no issue. There was no crowding. There was no narrowing. Every single tooth had a place and they were all lined properly because it was such a more fibrous diet, so harder foods. And if you look at other countries where they don't tend to do all of the soft food, African countries, like they just, their mouths are so spectacular. It's just jarring. You see someone who did not grow up in the US, they come here and you're like, I can see every tooth. There's space for all of it. And their teeth are even clean. I'm trying to think of exactly where they do it, but there are places where they're chewing on bones. They use little sticks to keep their teeth clean. They don't even use toothbrushes.
Do they go right from, and maybe it's helpful if you breastfeed longer, then you're more prepared to chew on a bone of an animal or something when you're ready to go to food. But is that it? There's no middle, like there's no toddler food. It's just breastfeed and then you eat the same food the adults do?
Yeah, the baby food is there for a reason because they do need to learn how to swallow. So that softer stuff, you do transition from breast milk or regular milk to the softer foods. But the best thing really to do is to prepare it yourself instead of doing the jarred stuff, which I'm guilty of using all the jarred things. I did not have time. But also, they have all those little mesh things where you can put like a carrot or a strawberry or something in it so that the child can chew on it and get that harder food without choking on it.
Well, interesting. I've never heard that. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. They're little mesh devices.
It's funny now, like I have gravitated towards the tougher, chewier, like, and I love bones. Like I like eating steak and we eat a lot of steak in the house. And I generally buy the cuts to have a bone attached to it. And then like I cut that piece off and like it's kind of understood. Now, granted, nobody else wants it, so I don't have to fight anybody for it. Like sometimes my son, if I encourage him to take like a section of the bone, he will. But it's like they know I like it. And it's almost like a joke in the family, you know, that I'll eat off the bone. But there's something, I don't know if it's just tapping into like some primal thing, but I really like chewing meat off a bone.
It feels good. It feels right. It's stimulating neural pathways that are not always being stimulated. And that's one of the biggest things myofunctional therapy does, is it starts to stimulate those neural pathways that were otherwise kind of neglected.
Talk about that a little bit. Like I know some of the exercises you gave me, like things to chew on or things to do in my mouth, are more centered around the neurology and like the signaling. What's going on there?
So one of the first exercises I tend to teach people is, I call it brushing. So I have you brush the tip of your tongue 5 times, and then what we call the spot, which is there's a little bump behind your front teeth called your incisive papilla. So like that spot or directly behind it is what we call the spot. And one of the biggest things we teach is to keep your tongue on that spot at all times. Now that brushing exercise, you brush the tip of your tongue 5 times and then you brush the spot 5 times. Then you connect them and hold them for 5 seconds, then bite down, close and swallow. And that is what I was saying, stimulating those neural pathways from the tip of your tongue to your spot to train you to get your tongue there at all times. There, as a hygienist, I will be polishing people's teeth during the cleaning. And when there are so many patients that when I polish the tongue side of all of their teeth, their palate is so ticklish, they cannot stay in the chair sometimes. They're like squirming to get out. And that I used to just think it was strange. But then once I got into Mayo, I realized, oh, that is why they jump out of the chair, because their tongue isn't sitting there naturally. They don't stimulate that area at any point during the day. So then it becomes very sensitive to any kind of touch. And that polishing becomes very ticklish. So the more you do that brushing and keeping your tongue on your palate in all areas of your palate, the less ticklish it gets, because those neural pathways are now being stimulated on a regular basis.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I wonder what all those neural pathways, like where they go else into the body. And it's not just that tough. Like I had the habit of being good at having the tongue on the spot, as you say, in the front. But I think where people, that's like really hard to even have like the awareness, is like the back of your tongue and having a connection. Like if you try to, like if you were to say, take a moment and sense the back of your tongue, like as far back as you can, and its relationship to the roof of the mouth, it's hard. It's like,
yes.
Like there's not a, like a inherent, or maybe I've just lost it. So it was like learning a foreign language.
Yeah.
Like it felt like there was no language to speak. Like I couldn't draw a connection. I couldn't feel it. But with practice and some of the exercises you've given me, I've got a lot more sensation, and I could like respond to like ideas around like contracting this muscle or putting this there. But I think it's like a lost thing that people have no like awareness. Like even like I'll see in the gym much more global things that we even see visually, like our leg or arm. People have like no body awareness, but like the tongue, we don't even like have the visual, you know, to help us along the way. Like we can't. So it's
and like, teaching it's, that awareness is difficult.
Yeah, I bet.
And awareness, really, that word is one of the words I use the most, is making sure that you have awareness of your entire body, especially your tongue. And doing the exercises, you also have to be aware of the rest of your body. You have to scan your entire body from head to toe when you're doing these exercises. Like just something as simple as smiling. Can you smile without tensing your neck? Can you smile without using every other muscle in your face? Can you just cheese and keep it that way? Or do your eyes squinch? Do your eyebrows go up when you smile? Do you have to lift up to smile? And sometimes people will feel a sensation down in their knee, you know, even just different parts of your body, because you're compensating with other muscles. So I always try to say, bring awareness, scan your body, make sure nothing else is tensing while you're doing this. You're not scrouched forward. You're not bringing your chin up. You're not tightening all the muscles, like clenching your fists or clenching your teeth or anything while you're doing the exercises. So awareness is huge, huge, huge.
Now, when I go to see you, it's in person because you happen to be down the street. The myofunctional stuff, is that something you can do with someone if they're not in your office?
Absolutely.
You can work remotely with someone?
I can work virtually with patients. The comprehensive, where I do the measurements and everything like that, that is more difficult to do virtually, but I send a kit with supplies for you to be able to measure at home and then record everything. And we can even do it virtually. I can say, okay, now hold it here and let's see what that number is. And I send you the pictures to take and you can take those. So everything is able to be done virtually.
And I know you gave me like a packet of stuff to do exercises with. I guess that could all be sent to people. Yep. One of those things was just a simple thing to chew on. And that fucked me up. I mean, you handed me and you're like, chew on this. I was like, oh, I like this. Like I knew that, I guess my teeth don't like line up perfectly. So there's mm-hmm. points that never really get a good close. And it's like, an itch you can't scratch. Like, I just want to feel uh-huh. the touch. And yep. then you gave me this thing to chew on, and I felt everything got to be, like, satisfied. And yeah. I, you know, just rode that wave. And I was like, oh, this is great. Like, I could do this all day. And then I destroyed myself. Like,
yeah.
Like, I was so sore for, like, a couple. I was, like, cursing you the next day. Because I had no, like, you didn't say, go easy. Or whatever. I just, you know, I was like, oh, this is good. So more is better. And I just yeah. chomped on that thing as hard as I could because it felt so inviting to do.
Yeah.
And oh my God, it was like, it's like being in the gym, going heavy after like 10 years on the sofa or something
yeah.
and being like the sorest you've ever been. And I would have never thought I would have experienced that within like my mouth and tongue yeah. muscles, but
you
man.
Worked muscles you haven't been using.
Yeah.
And actually the person who runs the company, Mayo Munchie, Mary Burke, she is wonderful. I love her. She is so knowledgeable. But she explained also that there are times that when you first start using the Mayo Munchie, your gums will get irritated because there's these little silicone prongs and they're rubbing against the gums, right? So sometimes I even had a little bit of bleeding one or two of the times that I've used it. And I was like, oh, okay. So apparently, even as a hygienist, I'm not flossing as often as I should, first of all. Second of all, that's strange. Like my gums apparently don't get stimulation here and they don't get touched here. But Mary has said that can happen, and to kind of power through it, you don't want to like chomp like crazy and destroy your tissue, but that motion is also strengthening your gum tissue. That device was actually initially made for periodontal issues, so for gum disease patients.
Okay. It feels very supportive. Like I really like it. I want to use it more, but it's like a challenge I'm having now with this apparatus I have. Like, I'm not wearing it now because I sound ridiculous when I wear it, but like, I try to wear it a couple hours a day and then I wear it at night. But it's like finding the time. Like, usually mm-hmm. I'm taking it out so that I could eat, but then I'm doing that. And then, so it's like I've lost a little consistency with that toy, but maybe I'll get re-inspired with this conversation to work that in more.
It definitely helps.
Yeah. And it, like, the soreness was just that first time. I mean, I think I adapted quick, and once I had recovered from being sore after a few days, like, it didn't happen again. And I was smarter about it.
It's just like flossing.
It.
If you haven't flossed in a long time,
right, yeah.
and you start flossing, it's gonna hurt for a few days.
You're gonna get all inflamed, yeah.
So it just takes time for your immune system to respond properly also.
That makes sense. Well, that's great. And it's great that you can provide these things virtually. And there's no like over state line issue. Like, you could work with someone from anywhere.
I could work with people in a different country.
Cool. Let's switch gears a little bit. So the cranial sacral fascial therapy, mm-hmm. This is, I mean, if I saw somebody getting this, it would look like not much different than maybe Reiki, or not even like, it would almost look like somebody's just hanging out with somebody laying on a table. And the practitioner yeah. is like,
just laying hands.
It's just like holding you in place so you don't fall off the table or something. Why? What is going on? Why does it feel so good? Why is it just so powerful?
So it's based on craniosacral and fascial systems and how they're not separate but interconnected. So it blends both of the craniosacral therapy modality along with myofascial release. And it's a very gentle, natural modality that produces therapeutic benefits without side effects. So it's not like I'm pushing hard and releasing all the lactic acid like you do with massage, which is also wonderful. It's also a great form of body work to do. But just so a lot of the exercise, a lot of the things that I'll do from the neck up is constantly having a hand on the occipital area, so the base of the skull behind the head, holding one hand there and then feeling the other areas in the body, whether it's the neck, the face, because you can hold tension anywhere. But I feel and just gently apply pressure to those tension spots while also holding the thank you. Occipital.
Why are you holding that? Like, what is unique about the occipital point for that?
Because then you're connecting that, because that's your cranial area. And then the sacral, if you remember the other ones I do, I have my hands underneath your sacrum. And then I'm doing lower body area.
But when you say connecting, is it just the sensation of being touched there and like the human touch? Or is there an energetic thing going on? Like, are you channeling like energy, like a Reiki practitioner would be doing?
A little bit of both. Yeah. Cause again, so holding in that occipital area, I'm also feeling the occipital area to see if there's any motion, because you'll have like a little bit like of a sway, or you'll feel almost like a pulsing sensation sometimes that tells you that the area that I'm touching with the other hand is reacting, that they're reacting to each other. And it's like a floating sensation is how I described it when I took the course, especially the sacrum, holding the sacrum and finding an area, even just in the hip. I would touch an area and I could feel the sacrum just kind of rocking. And then once it would stop, I knew I could move to a different place. And then if it starts rocking again, you can feel that connection between the area you're touching with the sacrum or the occipital area to the area you're touching.
Yeah, see, I still don't understand it. It sounds so full of shit, but it's when I experience it, it's like undeniable. And I don't know, like, am I just gullible or just like having physical attention by a person, or like, am I convincing myself this is awesome? Like, or am I don't know what's going on. So
trying to see if I can find the exact explanation about it.
So the cranial sacral part of this by itself, I'm probably going to botch this, but there's some structure that connects, I guess, like, I guess from the bottom of the spine up to the brain. I don't know if it's the dura. I know I've heard that word before, but there's something that's like housing the cerebral spinal fluid, maybe.
Yes.
That's like bathing the brain and some part of the spine.
We're moving that cerebral spinal fluid.
Moving.
That's what's moving through your body as those connections are being made between the occipital and
so
the sacrum.
So that already moves on its own, though. Like, are you speeding up that movement? Are you slowing it down?
We're helping it move to the correct areas, basically, because they may be cut off from certain areas. And it's also your brain waves are different when there's not enough flow. So yes. You know, we're speeding it up a little bit.
Why is holding your hand? Like, how does putting a hand on a sacrum and one on the occipital bone, why does that change that? Like, if there's a garden hose.
The fascia that's around it and that cerebral spinal fluid.
If I have a hose with fluid and I hold two ends of it, it doesn't change unless I'm like squeezing one end towards the other. Like,
yeah, exactly. So if you hold that hose and you block it off, you bend it and block it off in that one area, it's not going to flow everywhere, or it'll be too strong in one area. We're unblocking areas that are constricted.
Okay. So is the own body creating those restrictions due to like patterns, emotional stuff, whatever tension that we have, and then
physical, emotional, all of it.
And then the physical touch from the practitioner is like creating a safe space for you to release that, and then it flows. Is that what's going on?
Yes. We are guiding you. We are guiding the body to that release. You are moving however you need to during that process to release that tension. So you are usually very, very still, honestly. You may turn your head slightly when you do it. But other people, they'll be moving their arms. When I've done it on my husband, he has some kind of nerve issue that's going on in his left shoulder. And whenever I'm in that area, his arm just jerks, like just spasms. And once I'm able to go into all the different areas and finally get it to stop spasming, I know that we've released whatever it was that was caught up in there. So we're releasing all that fascia so that then this cerebrospinal fluid could also flow easier because they constrict so much.
As I experience it, it's like the deepest like theta wave state. It's like right before you kind of fall asleep. I feel like I'm on the verge where you're like, you're almost not sure if you're awake or you're asleep, but it feels really good. And you feel like you kind of melt into the table. Like there's no, like gravity has just won and defeated you. And you're like, literally like liquidy onto the table. It's such a nice feeling. Like if there was a pill that you could take that would just create that feeling anytime you wanted, like it would be a very big seller.
Well, muscle relaxers.
I don't know. I don't know. Oh yeah, those probably come at a price though. Like I would assume there's really no downfall other than the cost of having and the time to have one of these. And
this
I assume you can't do virtually. You have to.
I have to physically be touching to feel where the tension is. And you'll feel the bundles sometimes. I call them like crunchy spots or like a knot, just like a massage therapist would say, oh, there's a knot here, or I can, the tissue feels tenser, or you'll feel just like a little bundle of that fascia just curled up and just holding your hand there and basically willing it to release. It just slowly, slowly, slowly melts away. And then everything loosens. But there could be multiple spots, right around the same area.
The words will it to release, that kind of resonates. And, for our listeners, if it sounds like total bullshit, I get it. But I remember I did a couple Reiki weekend educational things back in the day. And the initial thing that I heard that made it believable to me was everybody's experienced banging your knee or stubbing your toe on something, and nobody has to tell you. You have this instinct, this innate reaction where you put your hands on it.
Yeah.
And it makes it better to some degree. You can't proceed with, if you stub your knee on the corner of a coffee table, you can't proceed with life until you put your hands on it.
Until you've touched it.
And then something happens. So we could obviously interact with our own body that way, some unseen thing that we can't maybe measure, at least with our eyes or whatever. So it'd be naive to think that we can't also interact with someone else. Like we're all connected. We're all in the same quantum soup or whatever. Of course we could interact with each other. But so I assume there's some of that stuff going on.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like you said, you feel like you just have to touch that spot. And that's essentially what I'm doing with the craniosacral fascial therapy. You don't even realize there's a spot that needs to be touched. But once I find that spot, you're like, oh, wait, I didn't know that was there, but that feels right. Stay there. When I was taking the course, it was the same thing. It was like the therapist who was learning on me, I was laying there and I was like, oh, that's it. That I don't know what that is, but I like it. And she was like, yeah, no, there's, she could feel the knot and the tension. And it's usually, for me, it's right in my shoulder blade area, but in the front, and we just stayed in that general area for a while. And she immediately knew when I felt that release. And it was like, I sighed as she was taking her hand away. We both just knew there's such an interesting connection. And that energy, it's just so cool. It does sound like bullshit. It really, really does. And it took me a while to finally take the course. Because I was like, I don't know. I don't know if I believe this. And then when I did it, I was like, Wow, I have never been so relaxed ever. And we did this thing that we call the human web. And one person lays on the table, and four other people are holding each limb. So one person's holding leg, right leg, one person's holding left leg, right arm, left arm. And you kind of just lay there, and the person on the table is just instructed to do what the body feels like it should do. And at first, it feels silly. You're just like, okay, sure, whatever. And you're just kind of like, I don't know. And then as soon as you start moving your body parts, you start realizing that like your leg wants to go with your right arm, or your neck wants to turn when you twist your right leg out to the side. And so the people who had each extremity were, I mean, just moving all over the place, and just they're just lightly guiding. They're not pushing the leg where it needs to go. They're supporting to make sure it's not just like dropping and falling, because that way your body is unwinding itself. It was a very, very interesting experience. I couldn't believe the places my body went to. And one girl, she was laughing at first, and then all of a sudden she was like, okay, it's not funny anymore. And she just had such a release that she started crying, and she wasn't hurt, she wasn't upset. It was just this amazing release that her body just let go of everything, and she was just weeping on the table, but she was happy.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see something like that happening. I mean, movement is can be extremely healing in itself. I mean, I just don't think we realize how bottled up we are. And we know that we store a lot of old past stuff, like in the form of tension or trigger points or whatever, or just like a gripping. Like I know I have a lot of experience of like a gripping in my like part of my intestines almost from emotional stuff. And the proof I have is when I've had emotional breakthroughs, like whether it's through breath work or like drugs, like I mean, one time I had this like I don't want to say overdose, but I took like way too much cannabis oil than I would normally take, and it was terrifying. But this thing happened during where like all these areas of like known tension, and like I know my body really well. Like I do the same fucking stretches every week for decades. Like I know exactly where my limits are in every direction, and it all got obliterated. Like all the envelope just got like shattered, essentially. The container got like the edges of my container were shattered, and it happened in minutes. So it's like I didn't change tissue length. I didn't change any relationship from one muscle to another. Like something deep subconsciously was like gripping,
And it let go.
and then it let go. And there were a lot of tears involved with that process too. And it was almost like the way I would explain it is like I didn't cry, but I was
Your body was
cried.
leaking.
It's like my body was being cried. It was fucking weird. But like I was like a different
It gives me
person
chills, actually.
mechanically. Like mechanically, I operated differently in a very short, in a very acute situation. Now, a lot of that wore off, probably because I didn't like properly reintegrate whatever lessons the I don't know, the spirit of that drug was trying to teach me or something. But it was a very important like learning experience of like, oh, this is this makes it to me, at least in my belief, that there's no doubt that we could hold things from our past. Because a lot of things came up from my past and like my belief structures around myself during that session. But the fact that the body moved very differently from, you know, the course of like 30 minutes or whatever, it just makes me wonder like, what is possible and what do people walk around with? And they're totally unaware because it's not like the flexion of a muscle that you do when you're intending to. It's not like you're in the gym and you contract the muscle to move a weight from here to here. It's like this hidden contraction that's going on that you're just
You don't have much control over it.
Yeah, you're not like aware. It's so weird. It's so weird that the body has the ability to do that.
The like emotional stress that we don't realize we have is killer. Just it is. It can be debilitating, completely debilitating. So you having that kind of release, that's why I was saying like that just that gives me chills. I guess I would be considered kind of woo-woo at this point.
I kind of want to do it again, intentionally. Yeah. But I'm fucking scared. It's like...
What is that drug that people always do? It's not ayahuasca. What is it?
Ayahuasca?
Ayahuasca?
I don't know. I mean, there's...
I don't know. There's like that... I know, but... it's supposed to like bring you to a completely different plane of existence.
I think there's a lot of drugs that at a certain dose... will alter your state of existence. Maybe DMT you're thinking of.
No, what is it? I'll think of it eventually. It'll hit me like in the middle of the night at 3 a.m., you know?
Yeah,
I mean, when I wake up.
I think if used with like the right intention, a lot of that stuff could be really important for people. Some people don't have the patience to get from A to B the slow way, like the slow and steady way. And some people might just like, give me the big dose and let me have the, you know, crazy experience.
Like, go on this ride.
Yeah, where I get scared, and I work through it. But yeah, I mean, to me, it's amazing that all these things exist. And I'm like glad that there's so many tools out there. And I guess what I try to do is inspire or encourage people to stay curious and find the tools that work for you that you like, that like serve whatever your goals are. And, you know, I look at the myofunctional therapy and the craniosacral fascial therapy as like just two more tools in the toolkit. Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, use them wisely, you know, try to get good at knowing yourself well enough to know what tool you need at a time to get you
absolutely
from where you are into, you know, a more desirable direction or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, what's your process? So for someone that like lives in this world, what are like your personal, maybe daily routines other than wearing the device you have to keep up the, I don't know, like the growth or integrity of like your fascia or facial stuff?
I try to be very mindful all day of where my tongue is. I catch myself with it sitting low every now and then, or just pushing against my teeth, especially when I'm cleaning people's teeth. I'll be rubbing my tongue against the area that I'm cleaning in their mouth, but in my own mouth, I'll be rubbing my
tongue.
It's
good that you're
area.
Not rubbing your tongue in their
I'm
mouth.
I'm not rubbing my tongue in my teeth.
That's kind of unprofessional.
Just a little.
People might pay extra
some
for
people
that.
Might like that. But yeah, I mean, the little things like that. And I sing to my patients through the entire cleaning. I sing. Yeah. Some people love it. I think in my entire dental career of 22 and a half years, I've only had maybe 5 people ask me not to. And most of them find it very relaxing, which it relaxes me too. So I had a patient one time who told me that she was told by someone that every time you sing, you pray thrice. And I was like, that kind of resonates with me. Like that feels right. Like it feels like a release when I sing. It helps me kind of calm my nervous system, which makes sense because with breathing exercises like humming, you know, humming just kind of resets your entire system. And
yeah,
what
I think
is it? Vagal tone.
Simulates your vagus nerve. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I've discovered singing helps me.
What are we talking about? Like what kind of music?
Everything. Literally everything. Like if you're in my dental chair, you would die laughing because you'd be like, how did we just go from like Jackson 5 to Metallica? When did that happen?
So you don't take requests from the patient. You just...
I do. I play Pandora. So I have it on Madonna radio. So it initially was a lot of 80s and 90s pop. But then as I gave thumbs up to things, it started incorporating like 60s and 70s. And then, you know, just kind of branched all over different ways. Again, the other day we were listening to like Chris Stapleton, and then it was kind of slower music. And then there was some Whitney Houston. And then all of a sudden 112 came on. And it was Peaches and Cream. And I was like, oh, this is hilarious. Like, And I, of course, started singing along. And my patient was like, I love that this is where this journey is taking
us. That's really unique. Your dental office should probably start marketing that in some way.
That's a big reason a lot of the patients come to me, because they're like, all right, what are we listening to today?
Yeah,
and if you don't want to listen to my station, you tell me what you want to listen to and I put it on. So music is a way that I kind of keep myself calm. I do acupuncture once a week. I see the chiropractor once a week as well and get adjustments. The boom boom stick, that little stick that you just inhale and it has the essential oils in it. I gave you that in your kit, right?
Oh, I think you did.
That's one of my resets throughout the day. Like, I keep one in my purse. I keep one in my nightstand. I have one in the drawer in the kitchen.
So you're an addict.
Yes. Huge addict. I keep one in my drawer at work even. And it's just this little stick with essential oils that you just breathe in through each nostril, like a big deep breath in through each nostril, and it opens your nasal pathways. And it's meant mainly to do that, to just open your nasal passages. But for me, it has started to be a reset. If I'm feeling stressed out, or if I'm feeling nervous or just uncomfortable, or if I had a patient who was just not the nicest and I need to kind of move past that, I grab my boom boom stick and I take 2 breaths in each nostril and then just close my eyes and reset. And those are my little things that I do throughout the day.
That sounds like you got some routines really fast. It's nice that you've incorporated it with like your day-to-day job stuff, because mm-hmm. then you're really...
And I didn't realize it till you asked me that question. I was like, oh, wow.
Really, like, submerged in your process that's, like, helping mm-hmm. you, where you're nourishing yourself throughout your day. So you don't need, like, you know, to take a 5-minute break every 3 hours
yes.
on a computer and get away. Like, you're getting it along the way. That's nice.
And I do notice on the days that I don't sing along as much, I'm not in as good of a mood. And if I don't like sing on my way home from work or to work, I will just be in the shittiest mood when I get to either location. So I'm telling you, just like the vocal cord vibration, there's so many benefits of that.
Well, our next session, I might ask you to sing a little bit, hear what this voice is like. Rachel, if people want to, I really appreciate you taking, I appreciate the services that you've offered to me. I think I've gotten a lot out of them, and I look forward to continuing them through this process. And I know you're not a big social media person, so I'm not going to ask you do take clients both in person mm-hmm. and virtually. So how do people find out more? Where do they go to see if you're a good fit to work with?
I do have a website. It is kind of bare bones, so I don't tend to do that much, but you can Google me. My company is RAD, Myofunctional Therapy, LLC, and my email address is it is radomt@gmail.com or radrdhomt@gmail.com. Okay. I am so not
it's
good
okay.
at this.
We'll link, we'll link to it.
I've
I know this
well,
is your
and now my nerves came
this,
up.
This is your first podcast interview.
Yes.
I understand.
radrdhomt@gmail.com. There it is, guys.
Well, that's a little risky putting your email right out there, but that's great. And if you're in Maryland, Central Maryland, then, I encourage people to get an in-person session. So if you're listening and you are in the area, come get the full Rachel experience. Maybe she'll sing to you.
I might do it. I might.
Rachel, it's good to see you again. Thanks
good
for coming on
you.
The podcast. For the listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if you think there's something that could be improved with your tongue situation or mouth situation, or you have unexplained stuff you'd like to experience a new modality, then I encourage you to check it out and see what's there for you and see what unfolds. Have a great day, everybody.